Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we hear the final episode for the holidays, winter. For further information about winter holidays for children, I suggest www.unitedplanet.org. This first story is really scary. It comes from Canada, and it's about kind old Saint Nicholas, but as you will see, he's so much more than that in this story. Here is Saint Nicholas and the Children. Two little children lived with their old grandmother in a remote place in the Canadian forest. They were twin children, a boy and a girl, Pierre and Estelle by name, and except for their dress, it was not easy to tell them apart. Their father and mother had died in the springtime, and in the summer they had left their old home because of its many sad memories and had gone to live with their old grandmother in a new home elsewhere. In this new home in the forest where they now lived, they were very poor, but they were not unhappy. Times were hard, and there was very little food to be had, no matter how well their old grandmother worked. But they caught fish in the streams and gathered berries and fruit and birds' eggs on the wooded hills, and somehow, throughout the summer, they kept themselves from want. But when late autumn came, and the streams were frozen over, and the berries were all gone, and there were no eggs, for the birds had all flown south, they were often hungry because they had so little to eat. Their grandmother worked hard to provide for herself and the children, that at last she fell very sick. For several days she could not leave her bed, and she said, "I want meat broth to make me well, and I must have good meat to make it. If I do not get meat, I can have no broth. And if I do not get broth, I shall not get well. And if I do not get well, I shall die. And if I die, you two children will surely starve and die too. So meat and meat alone can save us all from starvation and death." So the two children, to keep themselves and their grandmother alive, set out one morning in search of meat to make the broth. They lived far from other people, and they did not know where to go, but they followed the forest path. The snow lay deep on the ground and sparkled brightly in the sunlight. The children had never been away from home alone, and every sight was of great interest to them. Here and there a rabbit hopped over the snow, or a snowbird hovered and twittered overhead, all looking for food like the children. And there were holly berries growing in many places, and there was mistletoe hanging from the trees. And Pierre, when he saw the holly berries and the mistletoe, said, "Saint Nicholas will be soon here, for the trees are dressed and ready for his coming." And Estelle said, "Yes, Saint Nicholas will be soon here." And they both were very glad, thinking of his coming. As they went along in the afternoon, they came upon an old man sitting at the door of a small house of spruce boughs under the trees close to the forest path. He was busy making whistles, whittling willow wands with a knife, and tapping gently on the bark until the bark loosened from the wood and slipped easily off. The children stood and watched him at his strange work, for he had a merry, twinkling eye and a kindly, weather-beaten face and thick white hair, and they were not afraid. "Hello," said the old man. "Hello," said Pierre. "Why are you making willow whistles?"
"I am making them for Saint Nicholas," said the old man. "He is coming soon for his yearly visit. Indeed, he is already in the land. When he makes his rounds, he always gives whistles, among other things, to good children. And I must have a great store of them ready for him when he comes, for there are many children to supply."
Then he went on whittling busily with his knife. The children watched him for a long time in silence, and they thought, what a fine thing it must be to work like the old man for Saint Nicholas in his little house of boughs under the forest trees. Then the old man said,
"You are very small children. What are you seeking so far away from people?"
And Estelle answered, "Our old grandmother is very sick, and we are looking for meat to make broth to make her well." The old man was sorry he had no meat, for he lived on other food.
He told them at some distance farther along there was a butcher who always kept meat. But the butcher, he said, was a very wicked fellow, and sometimes little children who entered his shop never came out again. The children were very frightened when they heard what the old man said, and they wondered if they had better go back home. But the old man thought for a long time in silence as he whittled his willow wands, and then he said, "I will give you each a whistle, and when you blow it, St. Nicholas will always hear it. You must never blow it except when you are in great trouble or distress. And when St. Nicholas hears it, he will know that you are coming to grief or that harm is already upon you, and he will come himself or send someone to your assistance. But you must blow only one blast. The whistle should be given only by St. Nicholas himself when he comes at holly time into the land. But you are good children, and your old grandmother is sick, and you are trying to make her well, and I know that St. Nicholas will not say that I have done wrong." So he gave the children each a whistle, and then fear left them, for they knew they would now come to no harm if they had the aid of St. Nicholas. It was growing late in the afternoon, and the children set out on their way to find the wicked butcher. While they were frightened, they had to find meat for their dear grandmother. The shop looked very pleasant and attractive in the cold winter evening. Warm light was shining from a fire through the door, and in the windows were sausages and fat birds and big yellow pumpkins and cakes with red berries on the top. The children were hungry and wished for something to eat by the warm shop fire. They decided to enter the shop, notwithstanding their fear, to buy some food and to get meat for their grandmother's broth as quickly as they could. But before they entered the shop, they thought it would be well, to be safe, to blow a blast on their whistle, as the old man had told them so that St. Nicholas would know that they were in dread of harm. They stood for a while in the shadow of the great trees before the door and made ready to blow together. Pierre gave the signal and blew a long, soft blast. But Estelle could not get her whistle from her pocket, and Pierre had finished his blast all out of breath before she was ready to blow. "Don't blow now," he said. "You are just like a girl, always too late." But blow she would, as the old man had told her, and before Pierre could stop her, she blew a long soft blast on her whistle. Pierre was very cross, for he thought that now no good could come of it, as two blasts had sounded, but with his sister he entered the butcher's shop. The wicked butcher was in his shop, but not another person was about the place. It was all very quiet. The man was very glad to see the children, and he seated them by the warm fire and gave them food, and although he shut the door tight behind them, their fear soon vanished. After they had eaten well and were warm again, they asked for meat to make broth for their old grandmother, and the butcher said he would give them plenty of good meat, although it was very scarce in all the land. There was a barrel standing in one corner. In another corner was a large hogshead reaching almost to the ceiling, and the butcher said that both were full of meat. Now, the butcher was really the friend and partner of a wicked giant who lived in the forest. The giant's greatest delight was to eat little children. He liked no meal so well as a meal of little children, two at a time, pickled first in brine. He ate them all was when he could get them, but he was not always successful in his search, for children were scarce in the land. He was a great hunter, and he was able to kill many animals in the forest and to secure much meat, so great was his strength. And once a week, regularly, he brought a great load of meat to the butcher and traded it for any little children the butcher managed to entice into his shop. So the butcher got much meat at little cost. And the old man of the House of Boughs was right when he said that many little children who entered the shop never came out again. The butcher was very glad when he saw the two pretty little children. He was expecting the giant that evening on his weekly visit, and he thought gleefully of the great load of meat he would get from the giant in exchange for the children, for he would ask a big price, and he knew the giant would give all the meat he had for so good a meal. And he thought, too, of all the money he would get for the giant's load of meat. So he resolved to kill the children and pickle them in brine to await the giant's coming. When the children had finished their meal and had warmed themselves by the fire, they made ready to go home and they asked for their meat. The butcher said he would get it for them. They looked up at the shelves laden with more food than they had ever seen before, hams and cabbages and strings of onions, and the little children said, "There are good onions up there. We will buy some and take them home to our grandmother to put in her broth." The butcher said, "There are many kinds of onions in the box on the high shelf. You must pick out the kinds you want. I will lift you up to the shelf so that you can see for yourselves." So he caught them each by the coat between the shoulders, and because of his great strength, he lifted them high until they could look into the box and pick out the onions they wanted. As he took them down, he thrust them straight out from his body at arm's length and held them there, and they laughed because of his great strength. Then he brought them together with terrible force so that their heads struck one against the other, and they were stunned by the cruel blow. Then he threw them head first into the barrel in the corner, which was filled with brine, not with meat, as he had said, and he left them there to pickle well. He was greatly pleased with the fine load of meat he would get in exchange from the giant, who, he knew, would appear before many minutes had passed. Soon the giant arrived. He carried on his back a great load of meat, and he also drew a sled, heavily laden with many dressed carcasses of animals he had killed.
"What cheer for me tonight, and what fortune?" he said to the butcher as he entered the warm shop with his load. And the butcher said, "Good cheer and fine fortune. I have a good fat pear for you tonight, already pickling in the brine." Then he uncovered the barrel in the corner and showed the giant the two little children in the brine. The giant smacked his fat lips and chuckled and rubbed his great hands, so pleased was he with the sight of so good a meal. And he said, "We will let them steep well in the brine until tomorrow. I always like them very salty."
The giant agreed to give the butcher all his meat in exchange for the children. Then they sat by the fire drinking and eating until far on into the night. And the giant said that before they went to bed, he would take another look at the children to see how they were pickling. So they went and uncovered the barrel. Now, it chanced that St. Nicholas was in the land at that time, as the old man of the House of Boughs had said. He had come into the land to bring his yearly gifts to little children. In the evening, he was many miles away from the butcher's shop, but he heard the long, soft blast of a whistle, borne on the still evening wind. He knew it to be one of his own whistles, and it told him that little children were in danger. But it was followed by another soft blast, the late blast of Estelle's whistle, and the two blasts meant that the danger was not yet very near to the children, so he thought that there was no need to hurry to the children's aid. Moreover, St. Nicholas was just then leaving tiny dolls for little babies in many little houses in the forest, and he decided to take his time and finish the giving of all these gifts before he set out to the place from which the whistle blast had come. At last, he was able to go on his way. The snow lay deep in the forest and traveling was hard, but the white winter moon was shining and the path was bright, and St. Nicholas moved along quickly on his snowshoes. Far on in the night he reached the butcher's shop, from which he knew the children's note of fear had come. As he entered the shop, the giant and the butcher were just taking their last look before going to bed at the children in the barrel. They did not know St. Nicholas, but when they saw him, they quickly placed the cover on the barrel. St. Nicholas was suspicious that they were about some wickedness, and he knew well that in some way or other the barrel was connected with the dreaded harm of which the children's whistle had told him, and he thought that perhaps the children were hidden in it. So he said, "I have come for meat. I want meat that has been pickled in brine. I should like a piece from that barrel." But the butcher said, "No, it's not good meat. I have better meat in the inner room, and I will get it for you." So the butcher and St. Nicholas entered the inner room and closed the door behind them, while the giant sat on the barrel in the corner, trying to hide it with his great fat legs. In the inner room was a barrel filled with brine, but with only a small piece of meat at the bottom. St. Nicholas said he would take that piece. The butcher bent far into the barrel to reach down in search of the meat, but as he did so, St. Nicholas picked him up by the legs and pushed him headfirst into the barrel of brine. He spluttered and kicked, but he stuck fast in the barrel and could not get out. St. Nicholas placed the cover on the barrel with a great weight on top of it. That was the end of the wicked butcher. Then St. Nicholas returned to the shop where the giant was waiting, still sitting on the barrel. He told the giant that he wanted a piece of meat that lay in the bottom of the large hogshead of pickle in the other corner. He asked the giant to get it for him, as the hogshead was so high that neither he nor the butcher could reach down into it. The giant bent far into the hogshead and began groping for the meat at the bottom. St. Nicholas took a large bone that lay on the floor, and standing on a box beside the hogshead, he struck the giant a powerful blow on the head. The giant was only slightly stunned, but in his surprise, he lost his balance and fell head first into the brine. He yelled and kicked for a time, but his huge shoulders stuck fast. St. Nicholas covered the hogshead, leaving the giant sticking fast in the pickle, and that was the end of the giant. Then St. Nicholas uncovered the barrel in the corner into which he had seen the butcher and the giant looking when he first entered the shop. There were the two children. He caught them by the legs and pulled them out, and by his magic power he soon brought them back to life. He gave them food and warmed them by the fire, and soon they were none the worse for their hour in the barrel of brine. Then he gave them meat and brought them back to their grandmother, and they made broth for her and soon made her well, and they were all happy again, and the land was troubled no more by giants, for St. Nicholas never again allowed great harm to come to little children if they always kept his whistle near them and blew softly upon it when they were in trouble or distress. The next story comes from Russia, not scary at all, just about a sweet old woman who is, well, a little confused. Here is Babushka, a Russian Christmas story. It was the night the dear Christ child came to Bethlehem. In a country far away from him, an old, old woman named Babushka sat in her snug little house by her warm fire. The wind was drifting the snow outside and howling down the chimney, but it only made Babushka's fire burn more brightly. "How glad I am that I may stay indoors," said Babushka, holding her hands out to the bright blaze. But suddenly she heard a loud rap at her door. She opened it, and her candle shone on three old men standing there outside in the snow. Their beards were as white as the snow and so long that they reached the ground. Their eyes shone kindly in the light of Babushka's candle, and their arms were full of precious things, boxes of jewels and sweet-smelling oils and ointments. "We have traveled far, Babushka," said they, "and we stop to tell you of the baby prince born this night in Bethlehem. He comes to rule the world and teach all men to be loving and true. We carry him gifts. Come with us, Babushka." But Babushka looked at the driving snow and then inside in her cozy room and the crackling fire. "It's too late for me to go with you, good sirs," she said. "The weather is too cold." She went inside again and shut the door, and the old men journeyed on to Bethlehem without her. But as Babushka sat by her fire rocking, she began to think about the little Christ child, for she loved all babies. Tomorrow, I will go to find him," she said. "Tomorrow when it is light, and I will carry him some toys." So when it was morning, Babushka put on her long cloak and took her staff and filled a basket with the pretty things a baby would like, gold balls and wooden toys and strings of silver cobwebs, and she set out to find the Christ child. But, oh, Babushka had forgotten to ask the three old men the road to Bethlehem, and they had traveled so far through the night that she could not overtake them. Up and down the road she hurried, through woods and fields and towns, saying to whomsoever she met, "I go to find the Christ child. Where does he lie? I bring some pretty toys for his sake." But no one could tell her the way to go, and they all said, "Farther on, Babushka, farther on." So she traveled on and on and on for years and years, but she never found the little Christ child. They say that old Babushka is traveling still looking for him.
When it comes Christmas Eve and the children are lying fast asleep, Babushka comes softly through the snowy fields and towns, wrapped in her long cloak and carrying her basket on her arm. With her staff, she raps gently at the doors and goes inside and holds her candle close to the little children's faces.
"Is he here?" she asks. "Is the little Christ child here?"
And then she turns sorrowfully away again, crying, "Farther on, farther on." But before she leaves, she takes a toy from her basket and lays it beside the pillow for a Christmas gift.
"For his sake," she says softly,
and then hurries on through the years and forever in search of the little Christ child. Next, we visit the Dovrefell Mountains of Norway to hear a story about trolls, cats, and a great white bear. Here is The Cat on the Dovrefell. Once on a time, there was a man up in Finnmark who had caught a great white bear, which he was going to take to the king of Denmark. Now, it so fell out that he came to the Dovrefell just about Christmas Eve, and there he turned into a cottage where a man lived, whose name was Halvor, and asked the man if he could get house room there for his bear and himself.
"Heaven help me if what I say isn't true," said the man, "but we can't give anyone house room just now, for every Christmas Eve such a pack of trolls come down upon us that we are forced to flit, and haven't so much as a house over our own heads, to say nothing of lending one to anyone else."
"Oh," said the man, "if that's all, you can very well lend me your house. My bear can lie under the stove yonder, and I can sleep in the side room."
Well, he begged so hard that at last he got leave to stay there, so the people of the house flitted out, and before they went, and everything was got ready for the trolls. The tables were laid, and there was rice porridge, and fish boiled in lye, and sausages, and all else that was good, just as for any other grand feast. So when everything was ready, down came the trolls. Some were great, and some were small. Some had long tails, and some had no tails at all. Some, too, had long, long noses, and they ate and drank and tasted everything. Just then, one of the little trolls caught sight of the white bear, who lay under the stove. So he took a piece of sausage and stuck it on a fork, and went and poked it up against the bear's nose, screaming out,
"Pussy, will you have some sausage?"
Then the white bear rose up and growled, and hunted the whole pack of them out of doors, both great and small. Next year, Halvor was out in the wood on the afternoon of Christmas Eve, cutting wood before the holidays, for he thought the trolls would come again, and just as he was hard at work, he heard a voice in the wood calling out,
"Halvor, Halvor!"
"Well," said Halvor, "here I am."
"Have you got your big cat with you still?"
"Yes, that I have," said Halvor. "She's lying at home under the stove, and what's more, she has now got 7 kittens far bigger and fiercer than she is herself."
"Oh, then, we'll never come to see you again," bawled out the troll away in the wood.
And he kept his word, for since that time, the trolls have never eaten their Christmas feast with Halvor on the Dovrefell. This last story is quite whimsical. It is a New Zealand legend called Christmas Tree, or in the Maori language, Pohutukawa. Long ago, the little elves didn't have a rag to their backs except a hoea feather which they wore in their hair. They were the jolliest, tubbiest, brownest babies you ever saw, with tiny nubbly knobs on their shoulders, as if they had started to grow wings and then changed their minds about it, and the little furry pointed ears, as all wild creatures have. Only these were not wild, but very, very shy. Where did they live? Oh, just anywhere. All about, among the ferns, in the long grass, down on the sands, in all the places babies love to roll about in. And then people began to come about, so tiresome. They began to make houses, sell things in shops, tear about in big boxes on wheels, and send great clattering, shrieking, puffing monsters rushing throughout the country, dropping smoke and cinders like anything. There was such a clatter and a chatter, such gabbling and babbling, such hammering and banging and laughing and crying and hurry and scurry and rush that it was enough to drive one crazy. There was such a fuss, the elves simply couldn't stand it, and they fled into the bush. Well, wouldn't you, with all that was going on? And there they lived a long time. What fun they had swinging on the giant fern leaves, climbing the trees, chasing the fantails, riding the kiwis, who are very good-natured, though shy, and teasing the great, sleepy, round-eyed Moorpark, who is so stupid and owlish in the daytime. And then people came into the bush. Did you ever? The elves took to the trees altogether then, and no wonder. And then one day, someone in a picnic party left a scrap of paper blowing about. You know, the horrid way picnic parties have. And an elf found it. As luck would have it, it was a girl elf. Had it been a boy, he would simply have torn it up and made paper darts with it to throw at the other boys, and no harm would have been done. But girls are different. She smoothed it out and looked at it carefully, and then she called the other girls to look at it. And soon there was such a clattering and chattering that the boys came racing that way to see if the girls had found anything good to eat. You know boys. The scrap of paper was a page out of a fashion book, and there were pictures on it of horrid little smug-faced boys in sky-blue suits bowling hoops in a way no real little boy ever bowled a hoop in his life, and simpering little girls in lace frocks holding dolls or sunshades in unnatural attitudes. But the elves were delighted. To be sure, they were looking at the pictures upside down, but that made no real difference to them. They decided they must have clothes, too. Of course, the boys said, pooh, they wouldn't. It's much easier to slide down a fern leaf or jump off the end of a branch if you haven't any clothes. Everyone knows that. But when the little girls, after being absent for hours, came back all in darling little crimson kilts made out of blossoms from the Pohutukawa tree, the boys simply couldn't bear to think the girls had something they hadn't got. After laughing at the girls in the hopes they'd throw away their pretty little frocks, the boys went off together. They simply had to think of something, and it would never do to copy the girls. They came back later with the quaintest little breeches made out of broad flax leaves, stitched together with the points downward. It was clever of the boys. They had also stuck some of the red-brown flowers in their hair. The girls were vexed that they hadn't thought of that, but they went one better. They made strings of the scarlet nikao berries and hung them round their necks. And that was how fashion came to get started in the bush. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to a place only a very few people have ever visited, the moon. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading.